भगवद्गीतासुपनिषत्सु ब्रह्मविद्यायां योगशास्त्रे श्रीकृष्णार्जुनसंवादे कर्मयोगो नाम तृतीयोऽध्यायः हरि ओम् पेज् वि आर् आन् विच् वर्स् 14th वर्स् ऐ बिलीव् दट्स् करेक्ट् थेङ्क् यू सो मच् दट् विल् बि पेज् 162 प्लीज् रिपीट् आफ्टर् मी कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् सर्वगतं ब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् सर्वगतं ब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् सर्वगतं ब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् गतं सर्वब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् गतं सर्वब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् लेडीस् कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवम् तस्मात् सर्वगतं ब्रह्म नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितम् कर्म वर्क् ब्रह्म फ्रोम् द वेदास् उद्भवम् प्रोड्यूस्ड् विद्धि यू शुड् नो ब्रह्म द वेदास् अक्षर फ्रोम् द सुप्रीम् ब्रह्मन् द पर्सनालिटि आफ् गाड् हेड् समुद्भवम् डैरेक्ट्लि मेनिफेस्टेड् तस्मात् therefore sarvagatam all pervading brahma transcendence nityam eternally yagne in sacrifice pratishtitam situated regulated activities are prescribed in the vedas and the vedas are directly manifested from the supreme personality of godhead consequently The all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in the acts of sacrifice. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Yajnartha karma, or the necessity of work for satisfaction of Krishna only, is more expressly stated in this verse. If we have to work for the satisfaction of Yajna Purusha, Vishnu, then we must find out the direction of the work in Brahman, or the transcendental Vedas. The Vedas are therefore codes of working directions. Anything performed without the direction of the Vedas is called Vikarma, or unauthorized or sinful work. Therefore, one should always take the direction from the Vedas to be saved from the reaction of work. As one has to work in the ordinary life by the direction of the state, one similarly has to work under the direction of the supreme state of the Lord. Such direction in the Vedas are directly manifested from the breath, from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said, Asya Mahato Bhutasya Nishvashityam Etad Rig Veda Yajur Veda Samavedo Tarvanga Tarvangirashaha. The four Vedas, namely the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Samaveda, and Atharva Veda, are all emanation from the breathing of the Great Personality of Godhead. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4, 5 and 11. The Lord, being omnipotent, can speak by breathing air, for as it is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord has omnipotence to perform through each of his senses the action of all other senses. In other words, the Lord can speak through his breathing and he can impregnate by his eyes. In fact, it is said that he glanced over the material nature and thus fathered all the living entities. After creating or impregnating the conditioned souls into the womb of material nature, he gave his directions in the Vedic wisdom as to how the conditioned souls can return home back to Godhead. We should always remember that the conditioned souls in the material world are all eager for material enjoyment. But the Vedic directions are so made that one can satisfy one's perverted desires, then return to Godhead, having finished his so-called enjoyment. It is a chance for the conditioned souls to attain liberation. Therefore, the conditioned souls must try to follow the process of yajna by becoming Krishna conscious. Even those who have not followed the Vedic injunctions may adopt the principle of Krishna consciousness, and that will take the place of performance of Vedic yajnas or karmas. Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi brahmakshara samudbhavam tasmat sarvagatam brahma nityam yajna pratishtitam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has explicitly mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that we are all his eternal part and parcels. Just like if there is a huge fire or there is sun, then we are those small particles of light which emanate from sun. Since time immemorial, we have been living in this material world more or less on an independent basis from Krishna. Because everybody says, I have this feeling of living, but actually one in the human form of life has to pursue a little higher as to where I am from. What is my goal in life? Because these are the real questions. And Krishna, after impregnating the material nature with the conditioned living entities, has given us Vedas. Now the Vedas are four, as we know, and Veda Vyas, he divided one Veda into four, the Rig, Yajur, Sama and Atharva Vedas. And in those Vedas are delineated the activities the human beings must perform to get out of this material world, more or less. Actually, that's a step ahead. Just like if you are in the state of California, right? And then you are here and you need to drive a car, right? Who is there who doesn't drive a car or has the need to drive a car? You are exempt, but sooner or later you need to drive a car. Nevertheless, so when you need to drive a car, what do? You need a license. So for getting a license, what do?
Testing.
There you go. But how do you prepare for that test?
By practicing.
And where do you get the knowledge how to prepare for that test?
DMV.
There you go. A nice point. So DMV gives a book, right? And then you read through that book, and there are rules and regulations on how do you go, which side of the road do you actually drive, left or right, and which color of light at the light you stop. It's like red is there, you should stop. So all these things are clearly described in the DMV manual. Similarly, the Vedas are the emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he gave the Vedas so that the living entities can fulfill their material desires. And especially these verses which we are reading from the third chapter specifically describe the karma kanda portion of the Vedas. That you perform certain activities, you get certain results. For various material results, there are various Vedic prescriptions. If somebody needs a son, then they have to do certain things. Somebody needs to have prosperity, they need to worship so and so, do certain things. Somebody needs position, power, everything. Vedas clearly tell that what one needs to do to achieve certain material lives. But one should realize that the material fruits one gets from Vedas are temporary. But at least the Vedic followers are connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Because Vedas emanate from the Lord. In the same way you read a DMV book and write the test, at least you are connected to DMV. You are not illegal. You are not driving the car illegally in the state of California. Similarly, the connection established by the human being to the Lord is through Vedas or by following the Vedas. But the Vedic sacrifices or the descriptions and the activities performed through Vedas, Krishna says, are not enough. Why? Because when you perform Vedic sacrifices and activities, you get results which are temporary, which are perished with the body. That's why the Lord says in the second chapter, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna Nidvango Nitya Sattvasto Yoga Kshema Atmavan. That he says, my dear Arjuna, Vedas deal with three modes of material nature. Overcome those. Because then one comes to the knowledge, oh, I see. If all my activities through Vedas are giving me temporary benefits, and if I am going to leave this body, because of which everything I acquired with the body is going to be left here, then what's the use of doing these Vedas? That is the next level or the progression in the spiritual life. Then one comes to the understanding, yes, I'm not this body. There are certain things more than that. Yes, I should go to heavenly planet. This world is a miserable place. This is, I'm suffering all the time. All the Vedic activities are giving me only fruits which are limited. So I need to go to heavenly planets. Let's go. So there are activities in Vedas. There are performances in Vedas which kind of doing which you can go to heavenly planets. Swargaloka. And oh, Swargaloka is much more. Literally it's heavenly. There are descriptions in the eighth canto of Bhagavatam. There are descriptions of what Swargaloka is, what Indra's planet is. Not even Swargaloka is. Swargaloka is a broad term. It can include Indra's planet, Brahma's planet, so many other planets. But just the Indra's planet is heavenly enough. It's very, very opulent. People are having jewels. They are having beautiful bodies. They don't suffer so much. There is no lamentation. There's so many wonderful things happening in Swargaloka. Yeah, let's go to Swargaloka. That's the next step. But then we read in the scriptures that Brahma is also harassed. Always afraid. Oh my God, that sage is performing so many great penances. Maybe he'll take away my kingdom. So let's go and stop him. And he does that. He resorts to all sorts of mischief with the fear that, you know, that particular sage may be doing this and grabbing my kingdom. So this sort of anxiety is there in heavenly planet also. Brahma, he thinks, I am the supreme controller, and he tries to cover Krishna, the supreme Lord, his master, through his own illusory potency, as we read in the 10th canto, in the famous Brahma Vimohan Leela. So these illusion, bewilderment, and the sense of that I am the controller, enjoyer, is there also in the heavenly planets. Then one comes, and so this is a gradual progression of different stages of you can say advancement for a human being. And the heavenly planets, oh man, heavenly planet is also rough and tough. Man, I thought it was nice here. Just like how many people came to the US thinking that it's very nice here? Yes. Same thing with heavenly planets. Abrahma bhumunan loke punaravritano vachana mamapetya tu kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that even right from the Brahma loka down to the Patal loka, these are the places where there is death and misery going on all the time. Really? Then what next? What next? So Krishna says that because there should be satisfaction of soul, because through all this progression the soul is not satisfied. The soul is still hankering after something. The soul is still lamenting after something. The soul doesn't still feel that sense of belonging. That Bhagavatam says, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharma Yato Bhakti Radokshaji Ahaituki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. Because Bhagavatam, it rejects, it kicks out all these religion or religious processes which are cheating in the nature. Kaitava Dharma. Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. That is the sum and substance of religious performances. And those are just aimed at satisfying me. How can I be satisfied? What can give me pleasure? Where can I be more happy? This is the nature of the soul's enjoyment in the conditioned state of existence. But Bhagavatam gives the exact opposite. Satisfy Lord Vishnu, then you will be satisfied. Because soul, the nature of the soul, one should understand what is the nature of the soul. Because unless one comes to that point, one will be still under the illusion that everything here is mine. I'm going to enjoy it. But Krishna or the Acharyas have explained the nature of soul is to serve. The service is the nature of soul. For example, if you go to a market and you say to the shopkeeper, of course, here you have big, huge supermarkets where you can go and pick up sugar. In any case, here also you can go and pick up a packet which is labeled sugar. And actually you take it home and nicely make kheer, make nice first class kheer, and then put like that sugar which you bought from the market actually turned out to be salt. This is nonsense. It doesn't taste like kheer. It's like untouchable. You can't even imagine what will kheer with full of salt taste like. So you'll say, this person has cheated me. He's supposed to give me sugar and he's giving me salt. Why do you say that? Because the nature of sugar is to be sweet. If you say this is sugar, it means the intrinsic nature of sugar is it has to be sweet. Otherwise you don't call it sugar. Sweetness is something which you cannot take away from sugar, no matter what. Similarly, the salt is salty. So, what is that intrinsic quality of the soul that you cannot take it away? That is dharma. That is a true dharma. That's something which you can't take away. Because usually dharma means faith or religion or some sort of following. But that is something which is changeable. Right, a person gets converted from Hinduism to Islam, so his religion or faith has changed, but his tendency to serve is still the same. A person, if you see even in any countries, for example, a Muslim country versus US, the politician is still the same. He's going around canvassing for votes. It's the same way. He says like, I want votes. Please give me votes so that I can serve you. Why? I can serve you. Of course, today's politicians, we don't go into that region. But anyways, they just say, we want the votes so that we can serve you. A husband works very hard so that he can support his family, he can serve his family, right? And similarly, a shopkeeper, we customer service, we are number one in customer service. What are they doing? Serving the customers. So if you go on seeing in the material world, the sense of service is something which is intrinsic to the nature of soul, and you can't remove it from the soul. And why do people serve? That's another question. Are these people crazy? Why are they serving? Because you get some sort of joy, some sort of relishment in such service. A man works very hard and he feeds his children. And when the children are happy, he gets some joy out of it. Right? That's the nature. That's how why the service is happening. Because in exchange for that service, you get some happiness. But the scriptures say that unless one serves Krishna, unless one serves God, who is the real object of our service, one cannot get complete happiness. We can see in this world, a man and woman meet, oh, you are my life and soul, I'll live by you life and death. And woman meets a man, you are my life and soul, I cannot live without you, I'll serve you till death. 2 days later, they'll have divorce. Nature of material. And that's the way it is. A politician, oh man, he's the greatest, he's going to serve us. 3 days later, he's kicked out or impeached. Material. Krishna says, but that you serve me, you'll be eternally happy. That's the nature of the soul. And how, in the conditioned state, what happens is the false ego takes over. Me, I am the controller, I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer, I am the master. This is the nature of conditioned existence. But we can see that it's not a very happy state. People are, because of lack of this consciousness, people are suffering life after life. So, this Krishna consciousness helps us to re-establish our position as the eternal servants of Krishna. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, as I was explaining earlier, Sanatana Goswami was one of the 6 disciples and is the direct disciple of Mahaprabhu. And he asked Mahaprabhu, who am I? What is my nature? Why am I being tormented by these miseries? And Mahaprabhu says, Jivar Surupai Krishna Nityadas. That our eternal servant, eternal position is to be a servant of Krishna. And in that one gets great happiness. Bereft of that consciousness, one lives a life of real anxiety in this material world. Just like we are taking the example of DMB, for example, imagine a person who has never read a book, never passed a test, never even knows how to drive. Give him a car, what will happen to him? He will cause danger to himself and danger to others. Similarly, in this material world, because of the ignorance that we are part and parcels of Krishna, there's so much of suffering going on. As individually, society-wise, nation, cultural, there are so many barriers because of this bodily consciousness. This Krishna consciousness movement just not only helps a person to get rid of this bodily consciousness, but far than that, it gives the greatest, the most munificent of all treasure that is to be there. Even Lord Brahma can't obtain. That is love of Krishna. Mahaprabhu has come in this form to award this most beautiful, most munificent love of Krishna. Why doesn't Brahma get it? Because we know all the story, Brahma Vimohan Leela. That here was Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Braj, less than 5 years of age, because at that time he was tending calves. In a few days we'll have something called Gopashtami. During the second Kartik, in the Kartik, the second Ashtami is called the Gopashtami. Gopashtami, on that day, the significance is that Lord Krishna, up till age of 5, was tending calves. All the small calves he was tending of Nanda Maharaj. On that day, the boys are given charge of cows. So they get promotion on Gopashtami. That is the significance of Gopashtami. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was tending calves along with his friends, and he was playing lunch, and he was eating lunch. Every day they would have picnic. Braj means full fun. 24/7 fun. That is what is Braj all about. And we can all be part and parcel of that at the ecstatic pastimes of Krishna. So, he was tending cows and calves, and then Brahmaji, he thought, all these people are saying this boy is God. He doesn't look like God to me. Here he is, wearing simple village clothes, going along tending cows, playing with his friends, eating from their tiffin, eating from his left hand like a cow. He's God? I don't think so. And then he stole away all their calves and cows and then hid them. And of course, Brahma's 1 second is 1 year for us. So a second later, according to Brahma's calculation, he saw and he was flabbergasted. He thought he had stolen all the cows and then he had hidden them in a cave. Here was Krishna, as usual, nicely playing with calves and cows. And then, of course, Brahmaji realizes his foolishness and repents. In one of the verses, he says that, my Lord, he doesn't want position of a gopi in Vrindavan. He says, oh, my Lord, if you so desire, may I be born as a small creeper, as a small bush in Braj, so that when your devotees walk over, I receive the dust on my head and I become Krishna conscious. So Brahmaji also aspires for this prema or love of God, and Mahaprabhu comes and gives us this pure love of Krishna. Yeah, any questions, any comments? We'll probably do one more verse and then we'll stop.
Brahmaji aspires, but why doesn't he take up Krishna? It would be so simple.
Okay. The question is, why does Brahmaji take up to Krishna consciousness? Why doesn't he aspire? First of all, Brahmaji is, he is born from Narayan. He is not an ordinary soul. He is born from the womb of Narayan, from the lotus which emanated from the navel of Narayan. Brahmaji took birth. He is Atmabhum. He is directly son of Krishna. But as a demigod, you still have that controlling nature which is born from the Lord, because you are influenced by the mode of Rajogun. So pure devotees are completely nishkam. They, even demigods, they aspire to become pure devotees. So they are still in the modes of material nature, though they are extremely elevated. And they have Krishna's grace all the time. And another thing is, Brahmaji, we come in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, right? So Brahmaji also gives us an instruction through this verse that we should not aspire directly to become some gopis in Braj. No, we just follow the footsteps. We become the servant of the gopis of Braj. So through this he gives many examples, many instructions also for us to follow. Make sense?
Yeah, it still sounds like Brahmaji is attached to his administrative duties as a demigod.
Correct.
And so if he's so attached, then he's still in some, you can say, elevated condition state. He's not liberated.
Okay.
This pastime used to make Brahmaji realize this position.
Because Krishna says even the demigods are bewildered by me. And so this is a lesson for Brahmaji. This is a humbling experience for him, because he was puffed up that I am the controller of the universe. And at the same time, it gives us instructions on how to become the servant of Krishna, how to try to aspire to become servant of Krishna, and try to serve the Lord. But you should realize another thing, Rakshit Prabhu, is that that is service. Krishna said, go create this universe. I'll empower you with this. So he has to do his service to the Lord. He can't say no to also. So in that sense, they are very powerful. They are devoted servants of the Lord. But pure devotees fall in a whole other category, even which demigods want to aspire to become like that. And they will. They will. After giving up their post, definitely they will.
But Brahmaji is our guru, right? Kind of, if you look at it.
Yeah.
The way he started. So the thing is,
yeah, what is my kitchen?
Okay. So Brahmaji is our guru. So aren't all gurus pure devotees? I mean, he is Krishna Bhakti, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was bewildered for this pastime. But he is Krishna conscious.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and is there any end to be Krishna conscious?
What do you mean?
I mean, this is a progressive path, right?
Yeah.
There is no limit to it.
True.
Right.
That is true.
So he still aspires to be Krishna conscious.
Right.
But he is also Krishna conscious at the same time.
That's a very nice point. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it out. We'll read one more verse. This is the 16th, which concludes the one phase of the third chapter, which is like the Karmakanda phase or the Vedic phase. Evam pravartitam chakram nanuvartayati yaha vagayurindriya ramo mogham partha sajivata. My dear Arjuna, One who does not follow in this human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of senses, such a person lives in vain. Akshit Prabhu, can you do the purport, please?
Purport by his divine, excuse me, divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. The mammonist, excuse me, philosophy of work, the mammonist philosophy of work very hard and enjoy sense gratification is condemned herein by the Lord. Therefore, for those who want to enjoy this material world, the above-mentioned cycle of performing yajnas is absolutely necessary. One who does not follow such regulations is living a very risky life, being condemned more and more. By nature's law, this human form of life is specifically meant for self-realization. In either of the three ways, namely karma yoga, jnana yoga, or bhakti yoga, there is no necessity of rigidly following the performances of the prescribed yajnas for the transcendentalists who are above vice and virtue, but those who are engaged in sense gratification require purification by the above-mentioned cycle of yajna performances. There are different kinds of activities. Those who are not Krishna conscious are certainly engaged in sensory consciousness. Therefore, they need to execute pious work. The yajna system is planned in such a way that sensory conscious persons may satisfy their desires without becoming entangled in the reaction of sense gratificatory work. The prosperity of the world depends not on our own efforts, but on the background arrangement of the Supreme Lord, directly carried out by the demigods. Therefore, the yajnas are directly aimed at the particular demigods mentioned in the Vedas. Indirectly, it is the practice of Krishna consciousness, because when one masters the performance of yajnas, one is sure to become Krishna conscious. But if by performing yajnas one does not become Krishna conscious, such principles are counted as only moral codes. One should not therefore limit his progress only to the point of moral codes, but should transcend them to attain Krishna consciousness.
Any points? Any comments which stuck out? So why is this mammonist philosophy of work hard and enjoy sense gratification condemned by the Lord?
No sacrifice.
Can you tell us more?
Self-sense gratification, working hard, and take care of yourself. There's no yajna.
So the Lord says, evam pravartitam chakram, the cycle of Vedas. What is the cycle which the Lord is talking about? Yeah. So is that the cycle? So there is a cycle, Annad Bhavanti Bhutrani, that's where I was referring to. Yes, Sunny Prabhu.
If we are same in quality with the Lord, aren't we also supposed to be naturally enjoyers, and that's the reason we try to lord over the material world and try to enjoy, try to satisfy the senses?
Yes.
So isn't that natural to us? Because if we are same in quality but not in quality with the Supreme Lord, then we also try to lord over the material world and try to enjoy its resources.
But where are the resources coming from?
Isn't that the real natural tendency that we have, and that's the reason we are all like this?
Yes, but this is a false state of enjoyment. For example, there is a father, and the father drives, for example, a very, very luxurious car, and there is a 4-year-old son. Father, I want to be like you. I want to drive a car exactly like yours. What will the father do? He'll give him the keys to his car and let him drive. What will he do?
Buy him a toy car.
There you go. But the toy car is not the real enjoyment, right? So it's an artificial state of enjoyment where the child will go around for some time and then he'll realize, no, this is a lot of hard work. Let me drive with the father in the car. So similarly, in quality we are one with the Lord. But in quantity is different. Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, that's where it comes in. That we are meant to serve the Lord. And the Lord is the enjoyer. Since we partake that same thing and we want to be different or we want to be rebellious of Lord, then he puts us in this material world, just like a father gives a small toy car and say, go, have fun. But actually, a good son's duty is to serve the father. Because Krishna is unchangeable, he's always the Lord. So, yes, you're right. This is a false state of enjoyment. There is enjoyment definitely here, otherwise the soul won't live for so much long. Not the complete enjoyment. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Which cycle you were talking about? Where cycle?
Anad Bhavan. So the thing is, so you perform the sacrifices. Because of sacrifices, there will be rain. The rains cause the food grains. People eat the food grains, and again it goes on. That gives them the strength to perform the sacrifices. Again the rain. So there's a cycle of Vedas. And that's how Krishna has designed that cycle. So he says in this verse that those who are not Krishna conscious, they have to perform certain sacrifices. Otherwise, their life will be sinful. One might say, well, I'm nicely in my apartment. I'm just doing about my duties. I'm not hurting anybody. I never hurt a whole ant. I didn't even hurt an ant in my life. How can I be sinful? One might question that. But just the very nature of existence is it is sin. Who says they haven't boiled water for something? There you are killing germs. Who says I'm not breathing air? You are killing germs. That's the very nature of existence is sinful in this material world. And to counteract these sinful tendencies, one has to perform sacrifices. But this doesn't get you out of the cycle of birth and death. Why? Because that sinful tendency is still there in the heart. And unless one takes up to Krishna consciousness, the root of that sin is destroyed from within the heart. Because Maharaj Parikshit asks the same question. Hey, I'm doing a bad thing. I'll counteract with a good thing. Balance itself out. I'm good. And he says, no, that's fine. But still the sinful tendency is there. It'll again come up and then you will perform these. And Krishna himself says that a man is going to act according to the modes he has acquired. Helplessly he is going to act. But when you surrender to Krishna, he says, don't worry, I am going to protect you from all sins. Nature of Krishna consciousness. So the ultimate aim of all these sacrifices is somehow or other to become situated in our position to be eternal servants of Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
That example that you gave about a person in the apartment, not hurting anybody, not harming anybody, doing his own thing, and living a materialistic life, consuming things and all that, is still, the life is sinful, because there, he's not owing gratitude to where he's getting things from.
Nice, very nice.
It's the belief that I own something, and I own certain things, when the proprietor of everything is the Lord, even the fruits that he gives and the vegetables that he gives are all due to him. So there has to be that spirit or attitude of that gratitude which comes in yajna. And if it is not there, that's the part which is missing and causing sin.
Very nice, thank you. Actually, in the earlier verses, Krishna says that those who enjoy these gifts given by the demigods and they don't return back to them, they are thieves. Yes, thank you so much for bringing that point. Such a nice point. Any other comments, questions, or suggestions? If not, we are running a little late. I'm sorry for that. And then we'll go on to the next phase of our evening, which is Damodarashtakam. In the holy month of Kartik, we daily sing the Damodarashtakam, which is really a joyous offering from the core of our heart to that Lord who was being chased by Mother Yashoda when he broke her pot of butter. And that sight is as divine and as fulfilling as the sage who has written this song says that I do not want anything else except that form of Bal Gopal be situated in the core of my heart. So this evening we'll do that. And then for those who have come for the first time or who are not aware, there are ghee lamps, and then you can just light the ghee lamp and show it to the Lord and make your offering. And let's just do that program. Thank you so much for attending. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.